and your computer. Maybe have to pull it out and put it back in again if it's not behaving.
So I'm going to talk to you about just a simple study that we got going on in our lab. Again, this is, I know some of you have been talking about your dissertation, stuff like that. You know, this is not a dissertation. I'm not been told what I'm going to be doing for a dissertation yet or anything like that. So this is just one of the simple studies that we got going on. And it is just looking at bilateral deficit within the lower limbs. So previous research, mention of bilateral deficit came in 1961 from Henry and Smith, where they talked about the bilateral deficit as being just a decrease in force production in the limbs compared to the sum of force productions at the same time or separately. And then these authors here, 2001, they kind of further, you know, explained this definition as they felt like it was a limitation of the neuromuscular system. So here is just a graph I put together kind of to explain this bilateral deficit again. What you have here is, say, if you look at this, you know, arbitrary units of force, left and right leg separately, then left and right leg combined, you know, you get 1,000. Whereas if you do bilateral right and left leg at the same time and then sum those forces are going to be, you know, lower than what you get with one or two, you know, left or right leg at the same time. And again, this is just a representation of what a bilateral deficit is, even if it's, you know, if it's present, because some research has shown, you know, that it has not been there. Again, Howard et al. 91, they came out with what's called a bilateral index. This is just a percentage base to show if a bilateral deficit is there. And also what they came out with was a couple of different ways to look at it. So if it had a negative outcome, so if it's a negative percentage, it's called deficit. But also they showed positive facilitation, meaning that the sum of bilateral at the same time is larger than left and right, you know, at different times. So that index is, since they came out with it, you know, it seems like most literature and stuff has kind of used that index to go forward as that, and just seems to be a simple way to explain this bilateral deficit. I want to say it was Kramer et al. Had suggested that the bilateral deficit usually falls between 3 and 25%. Again, you know, 25%, that's, in my opinion, that's very large. You know, again, it appears that there's a lot of inconsistencies within the literature about this phenomenon. You know, whereas a lot of literature has shown the appearance of a deficit, some have shown the appearance of no deficit, whereas some studies have shown that there's a facilitation. Again, this goes back, there's a lot of inconsistency. From the 91 study, something that was very interesting, this was, they thought that this was a local neurological phenomenon, you know, trying to explain on it a little bit more. And one of the reason ways they did this was, so they did a lower limb movement and measured the force, and then they also did a lower limb movement while, say, doing a isometric contraction of the arm or something like that. And whenever they involved more muscle groups, you know, they had a lower decrease in force production during that time. So from this, they suggested that the body is just not able to activate large motor units at the same time, you know, at an optimal level. Like I said, you know, if you look at this, so arm force, this is arm force alone. So you got 385, and then whenever they're activating the legs and the arm at the same time, went from 385 to 368. So again, you're activating the same, you know, muscles at the time, just maybe you're activating more muscles. There's a decrease in that force, and that's something that they just tried to show there. So a way that muscle contractions have been looked at, you know, on a neurological standpoint is the use of EMG. EMG just, you know, if you break it down, the mean power frequency kind of represents the conduction velocity of the motor unit, whereas amplitude kind of represents the muscle activation. The activation itself, you know, can mean a couple of different things, and that's where, you know, EMG kind of falls short on that. But then you incorporate the use of MMG, it kind of, the literature suggests that, you know, you can define a little bit more detail what activation is. Whereas MMG, amplitude, can represent motor unit recruitment, whereas mean power frequency would represent motor unit firing rate. So again, this is kind of the two components that make up muscle activation. For those of you who may not be familiar, EMG, it just measures the electrical activity of the muscle, whereas MMG is going to measure, say, the vibration or the sound of the muscle. So why is this important? It's important because, you know, if you have a bilateral deficit, you have a left leg, right leg impairment, you know, if you want to consider it that, you know, you'd be more apt for injury. And so if you improve on that, and I got some preliminary data, you know, that I'll show, and it brings the question, you know, a lot of this stuff to question a little bit more. And also, if you can improve this, you know, you can improve strength a little bit more. So say if you've got a bilateral deficit, but on your left and right separate, you're producing more activity, more force at that time. If you can produce that same amount of force together, you're going to be able to be a little stronger, a little faster, and like I said, produce a little bit more force. So the purpose of the study that we currently got going on is just to examine these neurological responses, you know, at a bilateral deficit for muscle strength. And again, we're just looking at the lower limb, and we're just trying to, if we find these, you know, we're just going to try to infer on what this kind of means. So the only real hypothesis you're going to come up with, there's a few, but the main ones is going to be if a bilateral deficit is present, you know, just based on previous literature, I suspect that it's going to be due to a decrease in muscle activation. And this decrease in muscle activation is going to be due to a decrease in motor unit recruitment. And again, this just kind of leads to, you know, what the literature has said, because no prior study before that I have found so far has done EMG and MMG together, tried to specify exactly, you know, what is the cause of this bilateral deficit. So if a bilateral deficit is present, seems to be present most in untrained subjects, so that's something that we're going with. And just the main requirement is no resistance training within the past 3 months. Now again, you yourself may not consider that as untrained, but that's what the IRB has been letting us get by with, and you know, that's been their suggestions for when we go and have these IRB meetings. They want a number put to this untrained, so 3 months, and they all agree with this 3 months. And again, you know, past research shows 3 months of inactivity can lead to a good detrained effect. The main muscle that we're looking at is just going to be the BL of both the right and left leg, and the exercise is just going to be a dynamic seated leg extension. So again, a lot of previous research has used isometrics, used dynamometers, stuff like that. You know, we're actually going to use just a dynamic movement.
Is that the same machine that, like, Emily practiced on when you did the demo?
Biodex?
Yeah. Remember that thing that you stretched out?
That'd be very similar to a Biodex. Like, okay. Say, what I'm talking about is just like an actual, you go over to the Broatorium over there at the rec center, you know, just a leg extension that you put weight on.
Oh, I see.
You know, a lot of the units are stacked weights, and they seem to be inconsistent. So what we have is just a weight machine that puts the weight directly in the middle, so it's always there, and it does not have a pulley system.
I see.
So the way we're going to do this is just a bipolar wired setup. You know, over in our lab, we do not have a wireless setup, so we have wired. And we came out with 30 millimeters, you know, center-to-center difference. And the reason for that being so wide is because, again, I plan to put the MMG electrode in between the EMG electrodes. Now, this is just based on one of the previous studies I've seen where somebody was examining something else and they placed this between. So in my mind, you know, that provided the best concept because I'm looking at the same area of activation, whereas some studies before has put the MMG electrode, you know, farther up the VL. So again, I feel like that might be a different region or a different activation of the muscle. All electrode is placed according to synapse. Synapse is kind of the gold standard of electrode placement. Again, just talking about EMG being placed in between the EMG sensors. And then, obviously, impedance is going to be reduced by shaving, abrading, and cleaning the area of alcohol. This is just standard EMG prep through, prep techniques. Here's just a picture of showing kind of my setup. So, again, I cut the the EMG electrodes, and the center is silver fluoride. Again, it's just your standard EMG electrodes. And so from the center to center should be 30. And, again, previous literature from what I've seen has had electrode placements anywhere from 20 to 40. I feel like 40 is kind of stretching it. So me, myself, I like to have that electrode center to center, you know, as close as I can. And, again, what I came out with was the best I could do was 30. So here is our EMG setup. And, again, it's a wired setup. So these just have little crystals in there that pick up this vibration, this movement. It's just held on with double-sided sticky tape. So we did a little bit of preliminary data. Now this data does not have the MMG and stuff in it. It's just EMG and looking at strength as well. But this just kind of shows a little bit more of what we're talking about. So based on just strength, this is leg extension 1RMs. So we had three subjects. One subject, actually, the double star represents a facilitation. So they had an increase. So you see here, this subject, as far as their strength, they had a larger number, whereas one subject had, you know, a deficit, what we were talking about, and then one subject had nothing at all. So their bilateral and then unilateral sum came out to be the exact same. And then we look at the EMG amplitude, and again, the same subject that had a facilitation had a facilitation here in the EMG as well. And then had it, the same subject that had a deficit on the EMG as well. But where subject 3 had no deficit or no facilitation on the strength, they had a substantial, you know, fairly large deficit on the EMG activity. And again, if we break this down to this bilateral index that the equation I showed you before comes out here, you see it goes from 1RM strength to 0 all the way to the amplitude, you know, EMG to 28%. So the way I see this is if this subject would be able to make these same numbers, you know, bilaterally, this 28%, how much more strength could, you know, they gain from this increased activation? And again, I don't know. So again, this is just some preliminary data looking at the EMG stuff on it. You know, later we're going to start including, you know, like I said, the MMG and looking at this and figuring out the best ways to analyze what we got there. Questions?
I just wondered, like, that machine that I was one of Tim Hull's students that was doing some study a while back, and they had me on that same machine that Tim Hull was on before. Mm-hmm. But when you held on to the sides, and you did it, I wonder if, like, your right arm, left arm, you know, when you did one versus the left side versus the right side,
yeah,
if it made a difference because of the way you hold on to and the force that you could put when you're having the two arms, you know.
I would think it would. I mean, bracing is definitely going to have a big impact of it. You know, if you're lifting heavier weight, you know, that weight could catapult you forward.
Do those people not hold on to anything? Like you have to put their hands in front of them or
something? For my study, we do have the, you know, the old crap bars, I call them, that everybody's going to hold on to,
yes,
just to try to make this as, you know, consistent as possible. You know, like, for instance, the subject here, you know, 138 kilograms. And again, these are all in kilograms. It's not pounds. You know, kilogram, that was all the weight that machine had. So maybe, you know, they could have done a little bit more. And again, you know, I almost guarantee if they weren't holding on, it would catapult them forward from.
I just think.
So I was wondering if this could be stabilization of the pelvis, sort of an issue too, right? Do both items at the same time. Lower stomach at the same time.
Right.
We all have hind limbs.
Yes.
Being able to not stabilize one aspect of your pelvis because you're utilizing this, you'll be doing this incredible anterior rotation with these quadriceps that the other side stabilizes your hamstrings a little bit.
Yeah.
Then if you're doing them both at the same time, if it's possible. you know, this study I find interesting because it is upper extremity, lower extremity, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Part of the motor control guy, right? Has anybody ever done this in animal models to bypass the central nervous system? Do you know? Have you seen anything?
I personally have not read any animal models. It's just, like, all the articles that I referenced before was all in human studies and stuff like that. You know, like, say, one avenue that I see from this is once you get this, you know, you could throw in, say, a short-term training and see, you know, you could also look at this and see if there's a cross-education effect and stuff like this. You know, this kind of provides a larger model to look at bilateral deficit, cross-education, and stuff like that all at the same time.
Is anybody done upper extremity bilateral same time? Because I think that'd be easier to stabilize than lower extremity.
Yeah, some of the studies that I reference here, like I didn't specify if it's all lower limb or upper limb, or some of those are upper limb, the arms, the elbow flexors and stuff like that. But everything was done on such as a Valdex or something like that. Nothing with like a free weight or something. Not a sport-specific type of exercise.
I think most people have sort of done the bench press and then water the bench press.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if the ones that show that deficit on for the lower extremity, if they had the same, you know, on the upper extremity too, just to compare.
Yeah. You know, something the literature has said and what we've seen is sports specific. You know, so say if you got a baseball player, you know, upper extremity, you know, if they're right arm, left arm, they could be, you know, that they're going to show that. Soccer players, stuff like that, you know, basketball players, jumping off of one leg to do layups. There is anything, stuff, you know, like that out there, but something that is lacking is this bilateral deficit being stronger in one limb causing, you know, some kind of deficit or abnormality to take place to cause injuries or stuff like that.
Never thought of it, but something wild. If you're right-handed, are you always right-footed? You know, if you're right?
No.
No.
Is that?
I'm left-handed and right-footed.
Really?
Same. Oh.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't mean it. So it's not in neural. I'm just thinking the brain, you know, going. That's cool.
I will say right hand people versus left hand people. And left hand people, if there is a bilateral deficit there, you know, a lot of times it is not. You know, if it is, it's not as great because, you know, we're in a right handed world. So everything is right hand dominant, so they have to use their left hand more or right arm more. So it, you know, in most instances it is stronger.
Yeah.